Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 364 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Todd with Joe. How are we doing today, Joe?
I'm doing good. I'm glad you didn't screw up the number of the show like you did last week.
I did?
No, I did.
I know. I was going to say, well, we don't open the show each week. We switch off. I've learned that over a few episodes.
I was trying to trick you.
You did. It worked. Once again, your clever ruse got me.
I don't appreciate your ruse, ma'am. My what? Your cunning attempt to deceive me. Somebody's going to get that.
I got it.
All right. I forget you like good movies.
I do like good movies occasionally. Mm-mm. Except for Good Burger. That's not a good movie.
One of these days, we're going to have to do an After Dark where we talk about all the movies, like your Good Burgers and so forth. I know on a previous episode of After Dark, I tweeted that I would never see and have never seen Space Jam.
Right.
But yeah, like, mention a bunch of those sort of movies. Like, I think the most egregious one for me is, like, the Matrix movies.
Is that you would never see?
Well, I only saw, like, the first third of the first one.
Right.
It's a famous story in the Joe Sposto Ovure, where the scene where he pronouns Val, Keanu Reeves, opens up his eyes and says, "Whoa, I know Kung Fu. And I just said, guys, I'll catch you later. I'm out. I can't deal with this. This is just a little too much for me."
Okay, I'm just going to throw out an egregious one for me then.
All right, and this will be a tease for an After Dark at some other point.
Right. Goonies.
Yeah?
I've never seen Goonies all the way through.
Is there a reason why?
I never cared for it.
Gotcha.
I was just like, yeah, this is all right. I mean, it's not the best Corey Feldman movie.
It's License to Drive.
No, it's not.
No.
So.
You've seen Gremlins, though.
Oh, my God. Well, please.
Okay. Now, see, you say please. You've seen Ghostbusters.
But yes.
You're fine. You're all right. Two and a half out of three ain't bad.
Oh my goodness! You're just like a brand store meatloaf there. Two and a half out of three ain't bad. But anyway, you want to know what's on the show today?
Hey, Todd, don't we do a comic book podcast?
Because we ain't doing a comedy podcast.
Oh boy, we sure the hell ain't.
That's right. But would you like to know what's on our comic book podcast?
I would.
All right. A famous indie comic gets a movie. A new old Comic-Con coming to a town near you. Magical Marvel wristbands, as far as I'm concerned. And the greatest comic cover variant to ever appear in the history of the universe coming soon.
Oh, yes, sir. Boy.
That's right.
There's a lot to unpack in that news segment. We could just cancel the rest of the show.
That's right. Just get rid of everything else. Free digital books and sales also. Upcoming cons. What we read last week, which was Runaways 1 that you read, and Generations Captain Marvel that I read. What we're looking forward to this week, Todd's Art Attack, and Todd and Joe have issues, which was the giant-sized X-Men 1 because of the passing of legendary comic writer Len Wein.
Right. A full show, and who knows, there might be a few other things thrown in there as well. You never know.
That's right. Sprinkle it in if we can.
So let's dive into the news here. You had mentioned about a very popular, or whatever word it was that you used in regards to an indie comic. Right. So this is actually something that we've discussed here on the show. This is probably like the first indie comic that I really got into. And that's the Terry Moore written and drawn Stranger Than Paradise.
It's not the first. Okay, would you consider Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles the Mirage Run an indie comic? Because even though it was based on like superheroes,
100%.
Okay, then Mirage was the first indie comic that I was into, or the Turtles. Then Strangers in Paradise was probably number two.
I would consider anything printed prior to 1997 that's in black and white.
And not from Marvel or DC.
And not from Marvel or DC to be an indie comic.
Okay.
I aim low.
Yes, I've heard that.
So this is based on, an indie comic about two women. Catchu and Francine, and it kind of starts off, you know, kind of as a slice of life, budding romance sort of thing, and then as the series grows from a 3-issue miniseries to a 12-issue series to what it ended up being, like 125 issues after that?
I forget. It was a long run.
Right. So it obviously changed quite a bit as the years and issues and so forth went on. But I would say that those first at least 15, you know, the first 15 issues, and then as you dip into the first, like, 2 years of the, what would be this third series, I haven't read them in some time, but I do fondly remember those comics. And it was one of those things I remember people talking 20 years ago, saying mm-hmm. they're going to turn this into a TV show, they're going to turn this into a movie, they're going to turn this into a something. And I'm just so surprised that it took this long for it to actually finally happen.
I agree. And especially at the time, you know, everybody was talking about like, you know, making comics. This would have been easy because there's no aliens. There's no superpowers. There's no, you know, like none of that. It's everyday stuff. You could just steal it right from the comic. And I was shocked that they never did it. And I'm with you. Like, I remember fondly a lot of that stuff, but still wholeheartedly that first original Strangers in Paradise, nicknamed SIP, you know, the first 3-issue miniseries is still one of the greatest comics like ever made. Like that story, I mean, there's a sick friend who, I mean, at the time had, you know, like especially years ago, like with HIV and everything was taken seriously. Just it was heartbreaking and beautiful, and Terry Moore's art was amazing, and he was like the first person that I remember in comics to draw a woman very realistically. If you know what I mean, like,
yes.
Like, Francine wasn't like voluptuous, like, you know, with, you know, the zero dress and all that stuff. She was a real woman who had real problems, and she didn't think of herself as perfect. And that blew me away reading comics at that time. And I would, that holds up to me as far as anything else. And anytime anybody tells me Terry Moore from Strangers in Paradise, all I can think is jazz hands. Is because when I met him at a con and I got my Strangers in Paradise signed by him, and he did a little doodle. He's the first sketch in my sketchbook. He did a little Kachu, like just a doodle of Kachu, and then we all asked for a picture with him, and he said the only way he would do the picture is if everybody in the picture did jazz hands. And at that point, I didn't know what jazz hands was, and the greatest thing in the world was having Terry Moore making everybody like, this is jazz hands, and he's like, I want everybody to do it. And for the record, I have to see if I can dig out that picture. There's a picture of me and a bunch of friends doing jazz hands with Terry Moore.
Now, I know this has had to be several years later, of course, but it was about 6 years ago or so when we went to Baltimore. We got, you know, April and I, you were there with us as well. You know, April was pregnant. We got the Mark picture with Terry Moore, but he didn't make us do jazz hands.
Well, if I told the story, probably he would have done it. But he also said since he did the first first picture in my sketchbook, when it fills up, I find him for the last page, he'll do like a Francine for the last page.
Oh, that is awesome.
Whether he'll remember or not, like, you know what I mean? But if I fill it up, I'm going to try it.
That's a real cool story of all the crazy con stories that you've had. And I say crazy just kind of as a blanket. You know, you've got a lot of really cool, interesting con stories from the numbers that you've gone to. I don't think that's one I've ever heard before. That's a good one.
No, see, I try to tell stories. I won't tell a story that I think I've told
before. Oh, okay. You just kind of barrel through?
Just barrel through.
All right, good. Don't let me stop you either. So, this is, and again, it just kind of says that Terry Moore is going to be directly involved, as is Angela Robinson, who is doing a story that's being like, you know, it's on the festival circuit called Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman. It's the story of one of the creators of Wonder Woman and how the character was inspired and stuff like that. It's on the, like I said, it's on the festival circuit right now. So she's involved in the film. Terry Moore is directly involved in the film. There's no studios or anything else like that. So this might very well be an indie feature, but we live in a time where that's an okay thing. You know, this could be a Netflix original, an Amazon original, or, you know, whatever it is, and still get tons of traction.
So it's going to be a TV movie or?
No, it's as a feature film.
Right. So, and not even that. Look at something like, you know, whether you like it or not, The Blair Witch Project. I'm trying to think of lesser movies. What was the Max Landis movie? Chronicle?
Right.
Like, I mean, these aren't the same, like style of movies, but there's these movies that can be come in for a small budget and end up, if they're good, making a kajillion dollars. And I hope that's what this is for Terry. I'd love to see Terry cash some of them Hollywood checks.
Right, so that when you go to him with that full-up sketchbook, oh, well, so, I'm sad that it's an actual good sketchbook, because when the Strangers in Paradise movie becomes a huge smash success, it may not be as easy to go get Terry Moore. You'd have to get through, you know, his wall of PR and security and so forth.
You mean the Kirkman wall?
The Kirkman wall. But it doesn't have to say that the rest of the sketches in your sketchbook have to be filled by actual artists. My kid's getting really good at drawing stuff. You know, if you want to escape from Plants vs. Zombies or recreation of us playing at the local park, he could fill that sucker up in no time flat.
Oh, would he get my sketchbook as dirty as he did my Turtles hardcover?
Probably even dirtier.
Oh, that's what you want.
Kids dipped in filth.
I love my dipped kid filth.
So one of the places where in the future you might be able to run into Terry Moore is one of the newly branded Ace Universe comic book conventions. The head folks at this newly christened, newly branded umbrella of comic book conventions are Stephen and Garib Shamus, formerly of the Wizard World comic book conventions. So they've announced two shows so far, one in December in Long Island, and then one in January in Arizona. But I just want to pop some key phrases out of the press release, if I could.
Sure.
So they promise a new Comic-Con company that is going to be a groundbreaking approach that will shake up the industry. That the Shamus brothers created the old comic book convention model, and now they're going to destroy it.
Oh, well, they're the ones who are qualified to do it, then.
So how radically different will the Ace Universe Cons be? They're going to take place in, quote, world-class arenas and broadcast panels on the Jumbotron so everyone can take part of every panel. The whole thing is going to also be streamed on the internet, wall-to-wall coverage, time to shake up the industry and recalibrate, with a complete and total emphasis on the fan experience.
Is there anywhere in there
that have the cast of Justice League at the NASA Coliseum one?
Oh, that's good.
Henry Cavill, Gal Gadot, Jason Momoa. Is that how you pronounce that?
You're nailing them all.
All right. Ray Fisher. Oh, I think I butchered that one. Araza Millar.
Ooh.
And Sirian Hines. I don't know who that is. So it looks like it's everyone but Affleck.
Oh, and that's the one you want.
Is it? Is it,
yeah,
really?
So you can get your copies of Phantom signed.
Now, it claims that Sirian Hines is in the Justice League movie, but it looks like he's someone from a Game of Thrones.
No, Jason Momoa is from Game of Thrones. Aquaman is from
right.
Game of Thrones. I don't know who that other person is that you just mentioned.
When I do a search of him, he comes up as someone from the Game of Thrones. I don't know, though.
But I don't know who that actor is by their name. What's their name?
I'm obviously pronouncing it wrong. He plays Mance Rayner? Raider?
Mance, yes. He has a smaller part, but yes, he is in Game of Thrones.
Can I tell? Oh, my goodness. Spoilers, everyone. Can I tell you who he plays in the Justice League film?
Is he Steppenwolf?
He is Steppenwolf.
Okay. Right. Is he born to be wild?
I was going to say. That was going to be my joke. We kind of reverse engineered that one.
Oh, that's what we do.
So I don't know what to think of this, Todd.
You know what? Honestly, I like some of it because I'm not going to say, like, you know, because the Sheamuses are way smarter than I am. But I was always wondering why they didn't, you know, live feed the panels at San Diego or New York to you know, outside the show. And they kind of done it in the past. But other than that, I'm not sure how much they're going to be able to shake up Comic Cons. I know what would shake up Comic Cons, having more comic creators instead of actors.
Oh, boy.
That's all I'm going to say. But I don't know. Good luck to them. I hope they destroy the old model and the new model's better because, you know, I like Comic-Cons and I want them to not be in, you know, the gymnasium of a high school. I want them to be in the Long Box Heroes arena in Las Vegas.
Right. So that's the only thing that kind of jumps out at me a little bit. Like, I get you that there's no reason that these panels shouldn't have been being streamed somewhere
mm-hmm.
for many, many years. Then right. them saying that they're going to have the panels on a Jumbotron. Well, now you can't have multiple panels going on at the same time unless you have multiple Jumbotrons. And last time I priced them, Todd, Jumbotrons come very cheap these days.
Yeah, but if you're in a giant arena, they have multiple Jumbotrons.
Now, on the flip side of that, if you're doing these shows in giant arenas, also last time I checked, giant arenas have giant prices to rent.
Yeah,
which
but
in
they
turn
would
means giant prices for you to go to attend.
Nope. I think the arenas will be like comic people. They can't afford big prices. Let's lower the prices. As a matter of fact, all joking aside, I was watching Monday Night Football the other night, or Sunday Night Football. And
you
it
were
was
watching Monday Night Football on Sunday?
No, I was watching Sunday Night Football on Monday. Wibbly wobbly timey.
Oh.
So, but no, they actually showed the new arena in Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
and the guy was like, you know, I want everything to be priced accordingly for people, and it was literally like $3 sodas with free refills through the whole game, and $2 waters, and hot dogs were like $3. And I was looking at the menu. They showed the menu on the big like screen, and he said that he's trying to set a new trend that these are the prices for his football games, and everything that's in the stadium from here on out has to hold those prices. Like if WWE comes to town, they have to sell the food and the drinks and stuff like that for the same prices, or they can't do their little shows there. Which I think is really cool.
Isn't this the same stadium that also has a Chick-fil-A, which doesn't operate on a Sunday, which is the day most football games are?
I don't know. It's in Atlanta, so mm-hmm. maybe. I'm not a big – I don't know. I don't have the Chick-fil-A restaurant finder app on my phone. Mm-hmm.
No, I remember a story about that a while ago saying that that was going to be there, that there was a Chick-fil-A there. But mm-hmm. I guess they do other things there as well.
They'll have college games, they'll have whatever, they'll have monster trucks, I don't know, Joe, other
right.
stuff.
They have another team that plays there called the Atlanta United,
that's
which
probably
also claims that it's football, but I don't know, the Falcons play football, I don't know what sport these guys are playing with this weird white ball.
Ugh, hate that football.
Okay, so you mentioned that about concessions there, and I get you on concessions, but concessions are different than the price to actually get in.
Oh, I agree. I agree. But if you have nothing going on, take any money you can get. You know what I mean?
And just, and again, I'm just doing a general Bing search, you know, nothing out of the ordinary. And it says here that from 2012 to 2015, the average price for Atlanta Falcons tickets were $80.
Yeah, but that's football. Okay. I mean, people love football.
The average ticket price for a regular season Atlanta Falcons 2017 game is $173, double last year's ticket price average. Now,
do you want to know why?
Because they built a new stadium.
And they were in the Super Bowl last year. Mm-hmm. Even though they lost, winning...
Yeah, I want to pay $173 to see the losers.
Right. Well, winning draws crowds, man.
I guess.
That's why you don't draw crowds.
Exactly. But no, where I'm going with this is, I'm sure if they have it at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, I'll be able to get a picture of Henry Cavill while I'm eating my $2 hot dog. But I'm sure that picture with Henry Cavill will cost me $800.
Probably be free, because the Sheamuses want you there.
Right. Well, that's the main thing that I'm worried about is, you know, and again, what you're saying is stadium, you know, events cost stadium pricing. And Wizard, there's wrestling promotions that do events where they'll bring in like 3, 4, 5 big names that I personally know are $10,000 a pop. And they'll have ticket prices like $20 at the lowest end, but then they do the Wizard World pricing, which is what the Sheamuses say that they're going to blow out of the water. So I'm going to be interested to see how the pricing on this works out.
I am too,
Before I too harshly judge. We're having some fun here, but
I'm gonna, because I do think it's not gonna be comic creators, so it doesn't really matter. Because all joking aside, I don't want to say, you know, like how low on the totem pole are comic creators over the characters, the people who play those characters. You know what I mean? So these are, once again, are not gonna be comic cons. They're gonna be media, you know, conventions. So we'll see. You know what? I'm gonna go into it with an open mind.
All right. So another place that has similarly low prices is Disney World and Disneyland. I could never figure out which one is which. I always get them confused.
World is Florida, land is California.
Sure, and I'll forget that 5 seconds from now. But friends and family of mine who have taken trips recently to one of the two Disney parks have these magic bands that they get in the mail a couple weeks before you actually go on your trip. And it's a gimmick that you wear that stores your information, like, it's essentially your ticket into the park.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now they have Marvel, they were just kind of generic ones. It'd be like a blue, a pink, a this, a that. And they have Mickey Mouse on it, and that's it. But now they have Marvel Comics branded ones.
Oh, boy.
Right, and that means something to someone.
It does.
Not to me.
But I thought this was really cool. Because I was like, oh, bands, like, you know, Marvel bands. And then I started reading what they do. They're like, oh, like you can put it's your ticket, so you don't have to carry one. And you can program your credit card into it, so you don't have to carry a credit card and buy stuff at the park. And then somehow it's a memory holder. My brain does that, so I'm not sure how that, like, I don't know what it would store on there. But I remember as a kid being blown away, you know, you got a ticket and you went into this stuff. I don't know if I'm getting old or what, Joe, but this stuff is starting to, like, really amaze me. Because I went to Disney World a couple of times when I was a kid, and we didn't even have the Fast Pass when I went as a kid. Now these kids listening to their Maroon 5, you know, doing all the cool things that kids do, drinking their new Coke or whatever, and they have these magic bands that just let them do everything. I find it, all joking aside, absolutely fascinating that the technology that's starting to pop up.
Soon they're just going to be able to imprint a chip in your head of your favorite character, and then they'll just scan your eyeball that way to ride whatever your favorite ride is at Six Flags Great Adventure. Or when the local carnies have this sort of technology, that's when I know it's gone too far.
I was hoping for some sort of Busch Garden alien adventure or something.
Oh,
like
my
that.
Goodness. And apparently that's been scrubbed from the internet, Todd.
That has. It's been nuked. It's not there anymore. But no, the next step is just a Total Recall, yeah. Honestly. Mm-hmm. It's just, you haven't, you didn't even go to the park. We're just going to boof. Hey, do you remember that time you rode the log ride and got all wet? It's just right in your brain.
I approve of that.
Do you?
I do.
We could do that with this show. Just send, we should get like a Long Box Heroes podcast gun that could just shoot the podcast right into people's brains.
Mm-hmm.
And go to cons and be like, pew, 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 pew. That would change the landscape. Yes? No? Went too far?
Maybe. I kind of do that already. Remember the episode of The Simpsons where Homer had the vocabulary? Well, it was supposed to get him to lose weight, but it was mm-hmm. a vocabulary builder that he listened to at night.
Right.
I do that now with podcasts.
You sleep listening to podcasts?
I do, but it's podcasts that I've listened to before.
Oh, my God. You have a problem,
I
son.
I do. There's podcasts out there that I think I'm the only one who listens to based on my social media interaction to them. It's either met with crickets or what are you even talking about?
I don't know which is worse.
Right, I don't know which is worse either.
And you thought the gimmick cover was going to be the longest news story here. Oh boy.
Well, we still got a lot more time because our last story started out as one thing and has now morphed into something else.
Oh boy, has it.
So, Valiant, an absolutely 100% top 10 comic book company, has been re-releasing and rebranding a lot of their big properties, your Bloodshots, your Ninjax, your so-ons and so-forths. But of course, the one that Todd and I have been waiting for the longest has been the relaunch of Quantum and Woody, which is slated to be released exactly 3 months to the day of this episode going live, written by Daniel Kibblesmith with art by Kano. So, sometime last week, a press release came out, said that Valiant is proud to announce the Quantum and Woody issues 1 through 4 pre-order edition bundle, available only as a pre-order set to fans who reserve the first year of this all-new and untrustworthy ongoing series. This is what it says in the press release.
Right.
It says the pre-order edition comes packed with trade paperback style extras, bonus content, creator commentary, behind the scenes looks, process character designs, plus an exclusive cover by Nick Pitara that can't be found anywhere else. Then it continues on, of course, fans and retailers take note, the only way to obtain this is to reserve this before the, you know, so on and so forth date. No more copies will be made available beyond the date. Four massively expanded editions of Valiant's next must-read thing, plus in honor of Quantum and Woody's upcoming overthrow of comic shops everywhere, Valiant can now proudly reveal that each of the new series' first 12 issues will feature extreme ultrafoil variants, which we talked about last week, a dynamic new-ish cover enhancement featuring artwork by different comic creators, available also at the standard cover price at no minimum charge. Relive the face-melting ratitude of the era that gloriously birthed Beavis and Butthead crossed out, Ren and Stimpy crossed out, Quantum and Woody into comic book history with the best foil covers ever produced by a major comic book publisher. With a little, like, footnote that says, seriously, we're trying really hard, and they're going to look better than that one Silver Surfer cover from 1991.
Silver Surfer 50, I think.
Okay, so, just simply based on that alone, I'm buying this book anyway.
Right.
I want an extra cover that I might be able to hold over someone's head.
The hype machine is in motion.
Right. I'm going to get this book. Let's do the pre-order edition bundle. Let's do that. But no, Todd. Valiant goes one step further.
One step? One step.
Okay. So, the following press release comes out just a mere 3 days later.
Yep.
It says, Quantum and Woody shatters comic history with the most variant cover of all time. And it says... The world's worst superhero team sullies comic collections everywhere with the first ever chromium lenticular embossed, die-cut, foil-stamped, hand-numbered, hand-stickered variant cover. And then it says, that's it? Dot, dot, dot. for now, probably. So then it proceeds to continue saying that it's an unholy and experimental combination of comic books' most noted, notorious, and obnoxious cover gimmicks. And then it has a diagram of what it's going to look like. A chromium bar, a back lenticular logo on the back. And then it's also going to have, it's going to be hand numbered, have a die cut goat bite out of the front. And then it's going to have a random fourth Valiant Hero stickered onto the cover.
Oh my God. But at least they'll probably be easy to get, right?
Okay, so it's a 1 in 250 incentive.
One and it's only going to be limited
one per store.
One per store?
One per store. And it says, Valiant CEO Dinesh Samadasani said, our goal here is to break variants. Just completely break them. Have fun with them. People take variants too seriously. I know a guy. There's certainly a demographic of fans that love variants, and we're all part of that. We love it, especially when they accentuate a story, but people take them too seriously. They get upset by them, and certainly some publishers misuse them. We want to remind people, hey, these things are silly, they're fun, look how innovative they can be, and how much stupidity can go into them, and that's how fun this is going to be.
Right, and in a way, they take the heat off themselves.
Right.
Because this is totally ridiculous. We're all laughing at it. But don't we all kind of want one? Like, honestly? Like, are you like, dumbest thing ever? Like, PR, the hype machine. They're saying everything right. 1 in 250? What would I have to do to get one? Oh, my God. And I think there might be someone angling to get one at our local comic shop.
Not if, like I said, we keep teasing this, but it's our friend Adam, a.k.a. the Fancy Gentleman, who likes to rub it in our face every time that he gets a, what was it, a Fix variant cover?
Right, and a Quantum and Woody whatever.
And a Quantum and Woody variant cover. And he likes to rub it in our faces.
Maybe an Art Attack a little later we'll discuss, but all go ahead.
Oh, and I do just want to say, as I did read through all of the different variants, all the different things that they're going to do with that 1 in 250, they do have the footnote at the bottom of the press release that says, except glow in the dark. We really tried on that one.
You know where they're missing out, though, Joe?
Bullet hole through the cover.
Nope.
Ah.
Rub the blood. Where's the rub the blood, Valiant? Right. You want to be number 8? Get rub the blood.
Happy if our local retailer gets this.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm probably going to go in for the 4-pack.
I'm going to get the 4-pack too.
Right,
why not?
Because, again, I'm getting the book anyway, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if this has extra stuff and they're telling me that ahead of time, that they're doing that, I'm super cool.
Right, and like I said, one last thing. Isn't it really they're doing it, and they're doing it the right way to take any anger? You can't be angry at Valiant for this.
Right.
They did it so well.
They're kind of taking the piss out of this, and they're kind of having their cake, and they're eating it too. Now, you had mentioned a couple weeks ago about having a party at our store to do this, and there might be some off-mic conversations that we might need to have that might unfold. And again, I'm just going to say this. If you're sick and tired of us talking about Quantum and Woody, it might be a long 3 months, folks.
Oh, boy.
That's all I'm saying.
Maybe we should bid against the Fancy Gentleman, split it, and give away Quantum and Woody comics on this show. Write that down.
What if
we
bid against the Fancy Gentleman?
Yes, yes.
We get the book.
Right.
We take a picture of us with our arm around the book.
Right.
And then we destroy the book in front of him.
Oh, my God. That would be fantastic.
Right.
And then give the copies away to listeners of the show.
Mail the pieces away to the winner of the Pigskin Pick'ems.
Well,
so if he wants them, if he wants that book that bad, he can have the pieces of it if he wins the Pigskin Pick'ems.
Speaking of Pigskin Pick'em, I have stuff to talk to you about that too. So,
is it on-air stuff? Are we allowed?
Oh, we could. I think we figured out the prize. We did.
Well, let's talk about that now because that's the end of news. We're going to transition to some other stuff. But let's talk about, remind people about the Pigskin Pick'ems, of course. Week 3 is upon us. You know, varying people are doing good of varying degrees. I think we got, what, a three-way tie right now for first place?
I think so. And a bunch of people in second.
Right, so the three-way tie for first is longtime listener, super mega power listener of the show, Stiff Peg Pete, along with Mr. Christmas, comma, Dick Nightshave and the Knicks, and Eric Jitsu?
Fair enough.
There you go. I don't like Han Mio being that high up in the list, but I'll deal with it.
Don't worry, that'll all fall apart. All
right. But, anyway, so Todd, you mentioned that you have what the prize is going to be this year?
It's a either-or prize.
Oh, okay.
So this was actually Howard the Dave, I think, said this because he was like, he's angling for number one. Was that him?
Maybe.
I think so. I'm going to look while we're talking. But while I'm looking that up, I'll definitely discuss. But whoever said it said that it was Eric Fortman. I believe, said that he wanted to win, and when he did, he wanted the sticker and the pin that went with it.
Okay.
And I think we should buy a football sticker and a football pin, and whoever wins gets to choose whether they want the pin or the sticker.
Okay.
I don't know. I like that idea.
I don't even know where you would get football pins, because any place around me that sells enamel pins have been burnt to the ground. I may have just implicated myself in a crime.
Next you're going to say abdominal stretch, right?
Nope, I'm not going to say that.
Nope.
I'm going to say, look at him, Tony, he's got him.
Yeah. It was Eric Fortman, my mistake.
Yeah, you, the pin's on you, Todd. That's your business.
I can find a pin. You find a football sticker.
Football sticker I could find, no problem.
And you know what? Maybe I'll use one of them fancy Amazon click-throughs to find a football pin.
Oh, boy. Well, if you're going to use an Amazon click-through, Todd, make sure you use the Amazon click-through of one of our friend's podcasts in the soon-to-be-named network. At soon-to-be-named-network.com or soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com, where you can find a litany of shows, such as this dumb show, the even dumber version of the show, which is Longbox Heroes After Dark, Prodigal Sons Podcast, Prime Defective, two shows that don't exist anymore, Pressure and Parlance, Profane Arguments, Puzzle Warriors 3, Podvocacy, Paladins of Voltron, which returns tonight, I have it on very good authority, Aim Downsight Podcast, and Talkin' Gimmicks. I don't know if that show is going to be coming back. Joey's having a little too few sunny days, if you catch my drift. And if you don't, I'll explain that to you when the kids are in bed. But anytime any of these shows go live, anytime anyone from any of these shows appear on any other show, or remind me that they're on another show, I'll make sure to put on the site, soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com, and that's all.
Nice segue.
Right. I don't want to say that I'm the king of segues, because I'm not the king of nothing. I'm just me, man.
Mm. You're the deputy mayor of segues.
I'm the Roscoe P. Coltrane of...
I don't know. Maybe you're the comptroller of segues.
Oh, there you go. This is what comptrolling is really about.
That's right.
So, we talked a little bit before about conventions. Those are conventions in the future. Let's talk about conventions in the much nearer future, which is this weekend. Of course, the links to all of these will be in the show notes. There's a bunch of conventions going on this weekend all over the world, Todd. There's a convention in Scotland, the MCM Scotland Comic Con. There's the OzCon in Brisbane, Australia. There's the Edmonton Comic and Entertainment Expo in Edmonton, Ontario, Canada, maybe? Gene Simmons is going to be performing there with the Gene Simmons Band, which I guess is not Kiss.
That's right.
The Cincinnati Comics Expo is happening. The Santa Rosa Toy and Comic Convention, which is going to have Nichelle Nichols and Walter Koenig there. The Nittany Con in State College, Pennsylvania is going to have Chris Claremont there as the guest of honor. And if you were so inclined, I can almost guarantee at least one of the three Puzzle Warrior 3s might be in attendance. There, just look for them wearing their fancy Puzzle Warrior 3 shirt and go get a Mark picture with them. But Todd, I would say the two biggies this weekend are the one that breaks my heart, which is Baltimore Comic Con.
Ugh.
The one that I like to think of as our con.
It is. I think it's the official con of the show.
Right. That is your creator con. Sure, there's a few media guests here and so forth. You know, you can kind of consider Frank Miller, who's the guest of honor there, as a media guest, because he did direct RoboCop 3.
And The Spirit.
Right, and The Spirit. Two great films that'll go down in the annals of such.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you know, Baltimore, it's sad that we're not going to be there this weekend. And it's one of those things that in hindsight, that if I ended up getting tickets, I would not be able to go with the way that this upcoming weekend is shaking out.
Your hearing is coming up? Or?
Yes. And they're going to see if okay. I get this. They're going to see if I can get my ankle bracelet moved from one to the other.
No, swelling up again. All
right. But
retaining water. Go ahead.
I have to mention this. The Salt Lake Comic Con in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Mm-hmm.
This is your media convention, Todd.
My media convention? Okay.
John Cusack is going to be there.
Ooh.
Dick Van Dyke is going to be there.
My goodness.
Now wait, Todd. Are you sitting down?
I am sitting down. Do you want me to stand up and then sit down again?
Well, you're going to leap out of your chair when I tell you the man you had the last Twitter interaction of his life with.
Ooh.
Is going to be at Salt Lake Comic Con.
Is it the rubber mask Richard Dean Anderson?
Oh my goodness. Richard Dean Anderson of Stargate fame is going to
yes.
be there.
And he was in a couple other things. I think he was in Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, too.
Nothing else I could think of that he was in.
Me either.
But that's quite the collection of media guests there, and a bunch of other people. Like I said, all the links to all of those will be in all the show notes, just like the links to all the digital sales and freebies going on, and there's a bunch of new sales. There's some sales that were left over from last week. The Inhuman sale from Marvel, I think, goes on until the end of the month. The DC Harley Quinn sale is still ongoing. They did add in there a Batman Day celebration sale, and this is one of those ones that they've had dozens and dozens of times, but every time they do it, they always add new stuff to it, and it's over 700 books. There's tons of great stuff in here. I can't recommend all the stuff in here enough, but just a few things, of course. Whenever they do this, I would be remiss to mention it. Rebirth stuff is in here, and they don't put Rebirth stuff on sale, but it's the Rebirth trades. It's the first two trades of the ongoing Tom King Batman book, and it's the first two trades of the ongoing Detective Comics book. And like I said, those things don't go on sale.
And no, they don't.
You've heard us talk about both of them over the last year. If you've been waiting to check them out, you can get them for a buck a piece, essentially.
Good deal.
And then Marvel, you know, obviously we mentioned before because of the announcement of the movie, Strange in Paradise, a bunch of Terry Moore stuff is on sale. And you know what? The 3-issue miniseries that Todd and I talked about, it's there. You can get it for under $3. Literally one of the best comic book stories of all time.
Right.
And then, of course, included in the sale is the first 5 issues of Terry Moore's current ongoing book, a book called Motor Girl, which appears to be some sort of mechanic in the desert who was an ape sidekick. And lastly, Marvel is having a sale on Bendis Icon stuff, which includes stuff prior to him coming to Marvel, like Goldfish and Fire and Jinx and Torso and stuff like that. And of course, stuff that he did at Marvel, like Scarlet and Hakio, which was two different graphic novels that they actually broke up into four single issues as well, if you're so inclined. But also included in the sale is another book that we've talked about quite a bit on the show, but not in quite some time, which is Bendis's Fortune and Glory, one of the best graphic novels of all time.
Which one was Fortune and Glory?
Fortune and Glory is the discussion of Bendis's trials and tribulations in getting his properties sold in Hollywood.
Okay, I did read that one. I get the names confused sometimes.
Right, right. Kind of generic-y names with Jinx and Fire and stuff like that, but yeah, Fortune and Glory is so good.
Right.
Same digital sales, same freebies that we, you know, the same freebies that we've had over the last couple of weeks. Nothing new has been added there. All that's in the show notes, but I would be remiss to mention. Remember a couple of months ago we did the deal where, for some reason, Amazon had some crazy sale on a bunch of Marvel trades?
Yes.
Okay. And intermingled in some of those was a bunch of stuff for free.
Mm-hmm.
The free stuff is back.
Oh, that's always good.
So I've kept that link in there just for an occasion like this. So it's stuff like the first trade of... And there's stuff in there like super, super cheap as well. Like, you can get the trade of Civil War II for $3. Wow. You could get the trade of Infinity Gauntlet for $2.50. Then, you know, as you dip a little bit further, you can get the entire Dark Phoenix saga for $3.40. Now, a lot of the stuff, it has to be that you're a Prime member to get these deals. But it's stuff like the first two trades of the Darth Vader ongoing series are free. The first two trades of the Kelly DeConnick Captain Marvel book, those are free. The first two trades of the G. Willow Wilson Ms. Marvel book, those are free. The first two trades of the Jason Aaron Star Wars, those are free. Star-Lord trades, Guardians of the Galaxy trades, Dan Slott Amazing Spider-Man stuff. These are just a tip of the iceberg of some of the stuff that's in here for free.
Wow.
Right. So, I have the link still saved in the show notes. It's very clearly labeled as super cheap and free books on Amazon Prime. You know, and then, like, these are the ones where they rake you over the coals. The X-Men God Loves, Man Kills, that'll set you back 80 cents.
Oh my god, that much?
Like the first two trades of the Matt Fraction Hawkeye, the first two trades of Mark Waid's Daredevil, you know, all this crazy stuff. It's these are the books for free, $0 if you're a Prime member.
Oh, the only way would be better if they paid you to download them.
Right, and I'm telling you to do this. Do it through our dumb Amazon click through. Oh, and you know what? I'd be remiss to mention this here as well. The first two trades, it's two trades. The Tom King Vision book, the first trade is $2.20. These are crazy prices. And the second trade is $2.20. So you can get the entire run of that book for less than $5.
Wow.
Unbelievable, folks. Todd, I'm worn out.
Are you?
I'm worn out. I feel like Don West in the late 90s.
Oh, my goodness.
Without the Spectrox.
I was going to say, get this man some Spectrox. Stat.
Oh, my goodness. So, I'm going to let you kick things off with what we read last week.
What I read was Generations, Captain Marvel, Captain Marvel. That's how you know the difference. Written by Margaret Stahl and art by Brent Schoonover, I guess. Probably nailed that. But basically, these are one of the Generations books where the Cosmic Cube is giving people gifts where they can see their mentors and talk with them from a different time. And this is Carol Danvers, our modern-day Captain Marvel, going back in time to meet Captain Marvel in the Negative Zone, where Annihilus is attacking these people. And Carol just shows up and helps them out. Who they're people that are supposed to be pacifists, but so they're amazed by her, and she ends up, helping them. And one of the cute little jokes that I like in it is that she says her name is Carol. So they think it's like the Mar-Vell name, like Car-El. And she's like, no, you keep hitting the wrong beats with my name. And that's when the original Captain Marvel shows up, which I forgot, even though I'm a huge Captain Marvel fan, that they knew each other back when he was a Kree spy on Earth. And like she was having thoughts about it. I was like, oh my God, yeah, I haven't read those in years. And it's interesting because Captain Mar-Vell is doing those tried and true, like, you're a lady, get behind me, and I'll take care of this. And Carol is having none of it. None of it. But I like that she's standing up for herself. But then there's a few times where she's a little too hot-headed, and Captain Mar-Vell is trying to tell Carol, like, you're doing this wrong. Like, and she's like, of course, you know, the old straight-laced guy is going to tell a woman how to do things. And he ends up being right. And, you know, it's like you're going in there and you're trying to make friends and you're just yelling at them. You're not going to make friends that way. And she's like, you know what? Like, and it's interesting to see the mix go back and forth. And spoiler alert, they end up defeating Annihilus to save these people. And she's trying to tell him who she is because he doesn't really get it, but he seems to be like, you remind me of someone. Overall, it was a good story. It's not the best of the generation ones that I read. The part that I kind of did have problem with was the art because it looked like a little too manga-y. It looked like if I was watching an episode of Robotech, or I can't think of what the one with the battleship Yamato in space. It was too manga-y. It was too manga-y for my tastes. And that's what they seem to be going for. And I didn't really care for it. But otherwise, if you're a Captain Marvel fan, I recommend it to see the old one in action. I'm not a Carol Danvers fan, so I honestly can't say how well they handled her character, if you know what I mean.
That was going to be my question. You know, obviously you not, I'm sure, being up to date on what's going on currently with Carol, maybe like outside of whatever happened with her in Civil War II.
Right.
Right.
That seems to be most like what she's like, the hot-headed one in Civil War, but I don't know if that's in the regular book, so I really can't tell you.
Right, because I remember her characterization, even though it was written by Bendis, when she was on the Guardians of the Galaxy team for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to and during Civil War II.
Right.
I couldn't really get a handle on exactly where this characterization of her was fitting to play, but honestly, I hadn't been reading her main book, and I think that's a lot of times the downfall of this, and I know you got this because it's the Captain Mar-Vell stuff more than anything else, but at least you enjoyed your Captain Mar-Vell stuff.
Right, and it was funny because he was written like he was in the 60s and 70s, and it really comes through. And if you read it, I think you would groan, if you know what I mean, where, like literally, because he's like, he's doing like the hands on the hips thing, and he's like talking, and you're like, oh my God, this is so straight out of a 70s comic, but it's nostalgia for me where a modern fan might be like, oh, this writing is very dated, if that makes any sense. Just for that character, I mean.
Gotcha. So, kind of in the same vein of things, I guess, would be my review of Runaways, number one, The Return of Runaways, written by, forgive me.
Mm-hmm. Show notes. They're called show notes, Joe.
Well, they're called show notes, but it's one of those things where you go to Marvel's website and there's no information here under who the writer of the book is.
Mm-hmm.
Rainbow Ruel, with, and again, I can't even trust the art that it says, but it's by Chris Anka, but I don't even know that for sure.
Paul's brother.
Yes. So this is the return of these characters. They've been popping up here and there in some other books, most notably Nico, who was most recently in A-Force stuff. I think the last time that these characters had any sort of real prominence in the Marvel Universe was maybe during Secret Invasion stuff. maybe Dark Reign stuff. That Norman got his own band of evil runaways.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, getting it out of the way, I really like this. Because I really liked the Brian K. Vaughan and Terry Moore runs on this book. And I think Joss Whedon even had a 6-issue run in there back before he became who he is today.
That he did? I definitely know that.
Right.
I don't know if it was 6 issues, but he definitely was on the book.
Right. So, but this is not a great first issue for a new reader, unfortunately. If you're a longtime reader, you get everything that you wanted out of this book. You get, and again, it's right on the cover, you get the return of Gert. You get interactions only, though, with Nico and Chase. And half the characters that are on the cover of this book don't even appear in the book. That said, if you are a longtime fan of this book, get it, and you will love it. If you enjoyed the way that Nico was written in A-Force or any of the other books that she was in, you'll love it. So, just to kind of give you a glimpse of this, at the end of one of their adventures, many, many years ago in actual our time, Gert gets killed. Gert is Chase's boyfriend in the whole grand scheme of things. Gert has a mental link to this genetically altered dinosaur. Chase is kind of like a dumb meathead, but he's good with machines and, you know, tinkering with stuff and like their transport, he was able to turn into a time machine. He goes back in time, gets Gert before she's about to die, brings her to Nico, who is a magician with the Staff of One. And by that, she means anytime that she does a magic spell or uses a magic word, she can never use that word again. So she constantly has to think of creative and different ways to use her magic. She's already used, let's say, revive or fix or heal or whatever it is. So now she has to think of other ways to make that spell happen with different words. And if she tries to use the words that she's used before, there's not horrible deadly consequences, but there's consequences. These are the three characters that we get in this issue. If any of this has intrigued you, I urge you to check Runaways out, because even back then it was a little bit of a niche underground book, not with a very loyal fan base, but not a huge fan base. Hopefully this does not deter you, and hopefully this sells gangbusters and trades. But like I said, for a brand new reader who has no attachment to these characters, sadly, it's not the best first issue. And a lot of times, unless you have that attachment to these characters, that first issue better grab you right out of the gates, and I can't look at it that way. I can't look at it as though I don't know who these characters are.
Right. I know what you're saying. I'm the same way with the Captain Marvel book. You know what I mean? So, and I get it. And I've never read a Runaways issue in my life. I don't even know if I've read any Runaways characters that I know of. That's how little I know about Runaways.
Right.
But it makes it interesting, that whole, the Staff of One is interesting, best gift for that person's a thesaurus.
Well, and different writers have done things like that, other writers have done stuff I'll just say it in a different language, or, you know, whatever it is. But in this particular iteration, in what Rainbow Ruel is doing with this, she's not doing that. She's, you know, not doing the different languages and stuff like that. But yes, a thesaurus is exactly, you know, the sort of thing. And it adds an interesting element to the power. You know, instead of making this person all-powerful, it's putting a limit on an all-powerful person, which I think is really cool.
Right.
So, that's what we read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. Every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern time or so, we put up the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether we get our books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them in trade, whether you get them mailed to your home, however it is that you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out so that you're ready, you have enough money on your prepaid debit card, you get enough bags and backs, you have some sort of small animal who could cart your giant stack of books out to your mobile and then maybe ride that small animal home, whatever. The two things that Todd and I are attempting to do in the calendar year 2017 is guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week, and keeping a running tally of how many books we've purchased, broken down by publisher. Unless I stop buying books for a month, I don't think there's going to be a catch-up, but it's not. This wasn't supposed to be a race, it was just supposed to be a cataloging.
Right, I'm not worried about catching you.
Right, and you have one correct guess ahead of me.
Right. And I go first this week.
That's correct.
And I'm looking over your list, and is the book you're looking forward to most Wonder Woman Conan number one?
It would be Wonder Woman Conan number one. And I'm going to guess that that's also the book that you're most looking forward to coming out this week as well.
Yes, I'm looking forward to Wonder Woman Conan number one.
Right. And it is a DC book.
Okay, I just grabbed it and it had, because it was in the DC pile, but I was like, I don't remember. If I only had a notebook and triplicates and all that other garbage, I could look up what company it was from. That's all.
Gotcha. So, we'll be definitely talking about that next week here on the show, and I'm sure a bunch of other things, because we've both got pretty hefty lists of books for next week. What is, I have to ask, what is Dark Knight's Batman, The Red Death, number one?
That is one of those Dark Knight's tie-ins.
Oh, okay.
That is going to lean heavily on the Flash thing. I'm not really 100% sure if it's the evil Flash that was in the end of Dark Knight's 2 or 3 or whatever it was last week with the evil. Did you get to read that yet?
Which, yeah, definitely, yes.
Right, where the thing opens up and all the, it seems like the Dark Justice League comes through. This is going to be the Flash character-ish, whether it's Barry fighting him, I don't know, but I always get, these Flash, like spin-offs for the big event books, cause I collect the Flash, I have like a complete run of Flash, so that's why.
Who's the creative team on such a book?
You know what? I don't even know. I just got it as one of those. And also really quick, I'm not getting Star Wars Annual 2 this week. I'm getting Star Wars Annual 3 this week.
Okay.
But that was a typo, so.
This is written by Joshua Williamson.
Mm-hmm.
The Red Death, who is the writer of the current Flash book.
Right.
So it looks like I might have to get that.
Look at me getting, see, Mr. I have a notebook in triplicates. When you just fly by the seat of your pants, sometimes you find cool things.
Right, right.
Yep. My way is better, apparently.
Well, yeah, listen, once every 52 weeks, I'll give you.
Once every 52? Okay. Yeah.
Enjoy this victory.
It was another valiant effort by Joe Sposto.
At least a top 10. attempt.
You know I'm going to drive that into the ground, right?
And I'm going to enable it.
Okay, I'm glad to hear it.
All right. I've got nothing to be ashamed of.
I've heard otherwise, but anyway.
So, while you're over at longboxheroes.com checking out the pull post, be sure to check out all the other stuff over at longboxheroes.com, whether it be past editions of this show, past editions of After Dark, past poll posts, past Todd and Joe Have Issues. Everything that Todd and I have ever done on the internet exists over at longboxheroes.com. If you are so inclined, we have a little store link there that you could purchase a shirt or a sticker with our fancy logo on it, with art done by DC Comics artist extraordinaire, friend of the show, friend of ours, Tom Durinick. If you do not want a shirt or a sticker, you could purchase literally anything else in the world from Amazon, and you could click on our Amazon banner across the top of the page. Any purchase you make gives us a little bit of a kickback, and it just makes us happy. Now, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I've heard other podcasts saying that they've had to do all this changing and updating and flipping around to their Amazon click-through link. I don't know how we escape this, because everything seems to still be working exactly as it always has been.
As long as I keep getting my cha-chings, I don't care.
Exactly.
You figure it out.
So, some of the notable purchases through the Amazon click-through this past week. Well, somebody purchased Thor, the first one, on Blu-ray, as well as Dirty Rotten Scoundrels on Blu-ray. Someone also purchased a Munsters and Columbo t-shirt.
A mashup or two separate?
Two separate shirts.
Okay, I would love a Munsters Columbo t-shirt.
A Munsters Columbo team-up TV show.
Oh, okay. That would be good, too.
I'd like to think in my heart of hearts it was Words who purchased that Columbo t-shirt, but I don't think he knows this show exists.
I'm sure he does. Wink.
Someone also purchased a Wonder Woman in action case for their iPhone 6S.
Mm.
Someone also purchased it's a She-Hulk costume, a Halloween costume, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the description of it reads, Secret Wishes, Women's Marvel Universe, Miss Hulk costume jumpsuit.
Oh, boy.
Miss Hulk!
Miss... Now, is it MS? Like, Ms?
Nope, it's M-I-S-S.
Oh, Miss Hulk. Now, I just imagine it's a Green Man outfit.
No, it's not. It's actually like a full body costume,
mm-hmm.
but it has the green arms and the green legs, but it's a more current purple and white costume that She-Hulk has worn in the comics.
Gotcha.
And to go along with that, I would assume, and again, I like reading the descriptions, they also purchased the NetGo Women's Green Wig, Long Curly Hair, Heat Resistance Fiber, Harajuku Style for Cosplay.
Of course, what other wig would you get? I'm just thinking of, like, extensive wig work, that, you know it. I mean...
I didn't watch the TV show Powerless, but I know mm-hmm. that Fire of Justice League International was on there, and I wonder if she wore a green wig on the show.
I think she did. I think the DC stuff is known for its fabulous wig work, of so course. We're good to go.
They have to keep that tradition alive.
that rich history of great wig work.
So thank you everyone who purchased something through our Amazon click-through this past week. Todd, did we have an art attack this week?
Yes, we did. Speaking of a certain gentleman who is fancy, rubbing stuff in people's faces, he tweeted out, I don't know who the artist is, and I don't know what it's going to be from, but he sent a Rogues piece, which is one of my favorite, like, little indie comics by Amigo, which is like a Conan pastiche and a female fighter thing. Like, I don't know how to explain it, but it's a comedy book. And he has a piece that maybe might be coming up in a new project. I don't know. And the story behind it is I get a text message one day. Hey, Todd, I found something really, really cool on eBay, really, really cheap that I know you'd want. So I'm not going to tell you about it. So you can't outbid me. Talk to you in a couple of days. And this is what it was.
What a rotten person he is.
That's why we're bidding on the... That's why we're going after the Quantum and Woody variant.
And destroying it in front of him.
You know what? If I had what I call revenge money, like if I hit the lottery, like 800 million kind of a lottery.
Sure.
I always said I'd have a revenge budget, and that's what we would do, Joe.
Oh, boy.
Who knows? I might take a loan out and go after this thing just to do it.
Right.
Seems like a financially responsible thing to do.
Right, right. You've spent your money on worse.
I've spent more on less. Yes, that's what I've said.
Right. So, last thing we have is Todd and Joe have issues, right?
Yes, that's hopefully it.
All right, so written by Len Wein with art by Dave Cockrum. It's giant size, both in the fact that it's a return, but also it's a larger size issue. And Todd, you got to stooge off to me when you comment stuff to correct me.
Mm-hmm.
In the write-up, I mentioned that it, did I say, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- Right, okay, so yeah, I said they stopped being published. But it was more so that it was new stories weren't being published. They were doing reprints for the better part of, what, 2 years? Almost 3 years?
I think it was more than that, because the book, I think, then went bi-monthly.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, that 63 to 94 would be longer.
Or 63 to 70, number. Or 60, I think it was 67 to 74.
No, it was 94.
No. Issue 94, I'm talking year.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. That's why you... Gotcha.
So, right, they were doing reprints, but every once in a while they would throw, like, newish material in there, but right. Very rarely.
Right. So I got to stooge that out. You didn't like the way I did it, is what you're saying?
Well, no, you did it, but I wish I knew about it beforehand, so I could have addressed it maybe publicly in another form in addition to this one.
Okay, I didn't know. We'll discuss how you want me to slap you down when the time comes, when the mics are off.
Yes. So, I think there's a story that a lot of people are very familiar with. This is the rebirth of the X-Men. A ton of new people put onto the book as Professor X sends them, being Wolverine, Storm, Colossus, Banshee, Sunfire, Thunderbird, and Nightcrawler, along with Cyclops, to the island of Krakoa to rescue the other X-Men that had been captured. And hilarity and mismatch partnerships ensue.
Yep. This is actually the first time I ever read this issue.
Oh, really?
Yes, I've never been a huge X-Men guy, and this era was not really... I've read so little Claremont, Byrne X-Men, or this run of X-Men, like almost nothing.
Like from the 70s to the 80s, essentially.
Right, and then even after that, I didn't read much. I didn't get into X-books until, I think the first X-book that, Madrox, I did get X-Factor back in the day with Peter David, and then, when he came back and did Madrox Mini and then went into that X-Factor book, that's, my wheelhouse of X-books. But reading this, I really enjoyed it, because I did like the opening setup of, here's each member being recruited, and they all have a different feel to them. Like the Nightcrawler, to me, is just an old school Frankenstein movie. I really like that. And as you went, and then it's okay. And then here's, brings them back and says this is what happened to the old team. In part two, we get the original team. You get their story, and then bam, at the end, they all meet up and all the new and the old team fight the island. And then the big question, what are we going to do with 13 X-Men? See what's going to be the next issue. I have to admit, there are little things. It's saying the Beast graduated the school and left us. And, if that's on him, and during the past story, and I'm oh, cool, I want to read that. They did little things that made me want to read the story to see what happened. But I knew that it was going to be all the new team from here on out. But it's very interesting. But the one thing that I really came away from all this, besides the fact that this book is very, racially sensitive, is... Yeah. That most of the new X-Men team were really jerks. Really, really. Between Proud, which was Warpath. Not Warpath. What was his name?
Thunderbird.
Thunderbird, because his brother's Warpath from the New Mutants. Thunderbird is kind of a jerk. Wolverine has definitely always been a jerk, and Sunfire, oh my God, you just want to punch him in the face. But I thought it was cool. What'd you think of it?
Okay. We've discussed this before. I strongly hate when they write dialogue in the accent of a character.
Boyo, why would you hate that?
Except for Nightcrawler. For some reason, Nightcrawler gets a pass. I think it's because he's the most he's likable in general, but he definitely comes off as the most likable in this book.
Mm-hmm.
There was a couple scenes, especially the scene where Sunfire leaves the X-Men ship and then comes back,
Right.
There's a lot of, as you mentioned, racially insensitive words. Oh,
yep.
That,
and it's not Jewish American princess either.
Oh boy. That if this book was printed today, people would go out of their minds.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously some of these characters are meant to be set up either to be killed later on. You know, I think obviously in hindsight, you could see which characters, even from looking at the cover of the book, where like Banshee and Sunfire aren't even on the cover. And Thunderbird is kind of like the smallest one, kind of further in the background. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, you can see which ones are the forefront characters and which ones aren't. I didn't remember when Professor X goes to find Storm, when she's just like the goddess of whatever that village is, that she's just naked.
Right.
Which was very interesting to be putting in a book of this era. And it was something that would kind of go forward when Claremont took over the book. But I really like this. I like the reveal of what Krakoa was. And obviously, in 2017, we all know what Krakoa is, but it was interesting to see that kind of play out in this. Also, I say to people who their only idea of Cyclops is from the 90s cartoon, give this a read, because this is, like, Cyclops was awesome in this book.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is, as Todd mentioned, I have a lot of blind spots in my 70s to 80s run of X-Men, and this is a book that I did read many, many, many years ago, because as I'm reading it, I'm like, okay, I remember this, I remember this, I remember this, it was kind of all coming back to me, but then when I was done, I'm like, I want to read more of this.
Right. And you know what, they talk about diversity in comics today.
Mm.
Like, yeah, at least have to admit they tried. You know what I mean? Whether you want to say it was racial stereotypes or whatever, they did make a diverse team of X-Men there for a hot minute.
Right, but it's a different time, Todd, and you can't judge.
That's right. And like you said, Cyclops is really cool. And man, have they really destroyed his legacy lately? Like when he became the mutant terrorist and everything. Like,
he became fake Magneto.
Right, but with the Phoenix Force. And then he was killed during Secret Wars. It was like, what a mess you've made, Scott Summers.
Yep.
And then, well, you know what we'll do? Do a really cool 6 issues or 5 issues with Greg Rucka of time-traveling teenage Cyclops.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know what they've done with him since.
Yeah, he's still around. He's on the Champions team with all like the younger heroes.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, usually when it comes to like character and plot development stuff, he's like fifth on the list of anyone who gets to do stuff in the book. It's the triangle of Miles Morales, Nova, and Kamala Khan. Those are like your three leads. Then Viv, the teenage daughter of Vision, totally awesome Hulk, gets stuff to do. And then it's like everyone else. And Cyclops teenage Cyclops is at the list of the everyone else.
Right.
And every time that it's like, hey, you become an evil killer. And he's like, no, I don't. Yes, you do. Well, I'm not going to have that happen. Hey, we have an adventure we have to go on.
It's just rubbing it in his face every time.
Right.
Well, if you keep it up, I am going to become that.
I'll show you. You're going to pay.
That's right. Grrr. Optic blast. I think that's actually the sound effect.
And that was another thing, of course. There was not as much in that one 80s issue of Avengers that we read a couple half issues ago,
mm-hmm.
With Hawkeye, where every during the fight scene, it was them, both characters in the fight scene, describing what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
There was a little bit of that in this, but not as much as there was in the 80s.
Right. I will cut you with my claw.
Right.
I will scream at you with my powers, boyo.
That tractor is barreling toward my daughter, my sister, who's not paying attention. I better act quick and turn into steel and stop it.
Now, you bring that up real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the official first appearance of Magique?
Yes.
It would have to be, wouldn't it?
I would certainly say so.
Magic with a CK.
Right.
Just making sure you know.
Not to be confused with Black Magic, the Greg Rucka, Nicola Scott book from Image currently published today.
Yes.
All right. So, It was a good book. I liked it a lot.
Me too.
It makes me want to read more X-Men, but I got no time to do so.
That's right. So, what's on the list for next week, Mr. Sposo?
All right. So, this got delayed a week, but, you know, promised we'd get to it. And, of course, we will always take suggestions from you, the listeners, if it's something that we already haven't covered, of course. And as long as it's a one-shot thing. I know we've had people mention before, it's like, oh, here's this, you know, four-issue miniseries, or here's this, you know, two-storyline thing, and so on and so forth. If it's a one-and-done, you tweet it at us, you leave it in the comments or something, you know, we'll absolutely get to it. We want to make sure that we're servicing the listeners with this podcast and all the segments on the show. So longtime listener of the show, Jason Sandberg, Jason_Sandberg on Twitter, mentioned New Avengers number 8, written by Brian Michael Bendis. It's a date between Jessica Jones and Luke Cage that gets interrupted by Doctor Doom, or so it would seem.
By who?
Doctor Doom.
You had me at Doctor Doom.
That's why I saved his name for last.
That's right. You want to close with the big name.
Right. You got to keep them hanging on. If I just say Doctor Doom shows up and does a whole bunch of other things, you're just like, I don't know what you said after Doctor Doom.
What'd you say? I heard Doctor Doom.
Right. All right. So I think we did a whole show today.
We did a whole show and a little bit more.
Right. Just a smidge extra. So thanks, everyone, for listening to Longbox Heroes, episode 364. For Todd, this is Joe saying we'll catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boop! All right, here we are. It's week 3 of the football picks.
Week 3?
Yeah, we got...
I do not like week 3.
Why not?
Because it's boring.
We've had this discussion. I don't think...
I hate the weeks.
You don't want to do the football picks anymore?
I do, but I'm sucking on my lollipop.
All right, so he's going to be a little difficult to understand, but I'll do my best. So who do you think is going to win, the Rams or the 49ers? I didn't understand that. You're going to have to try that again, Mr. Lollipop.
Ramunition.
The Ravens or the Jaguars?
Raven.
I understood that. Ravens. Falcons or Lions?
Falcons.
This is going to be quite the exercise, folks. The Broncos or the Bills?
Broncos.
The Steelers or the Bears?
The Bear.
You're going to have to say that one again.
The Bear.
The Bears. It's more than one bear. The Browns or the Colts? You're going to have to say that one. Go ahead.
The Colts.
The Dolphins or the Jets?
The Jets.
That one I understood. The Jets. Buccaneers or the Vikings?
Butt races.
No, that game's coming up later. Buccaneers or the Vikings?
Buccaneers is butt face.
Okay. Texans or the Patriots?
Texans!
I'm glad you're cracking yourself up. The Saints or the Panthers?
The Pants!
No, which one? For real?
The Panthers.
Okay, thank you. The Giants or the Eagles?
I'm a giant!
Can you say it like this? Can you like say like as deep as your voice can get and say, I'm a giant?
I'm a giant.
I'll make Todd listen to that. The Seahawks or the Titans? The Bengals or the Packers?
The Packers.
The Chiefs or the Chargers?
The Charge.
Chargers. The Redskins or the Raiders?
The Raiders.
You have to say that one again.
The Raiders.
That was the one I thought you were going to say the butt faces on.
I said the Raid face.
Last one. Cowboys or Cardinals?
Cardface.
Cardinals?
Yes.
Okay. You're super silly tonight.
Cardface.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
So long, sucker. I'll see you later tomorrow, butt faces.